John chapter 12, starting at verse 20, and we're going to read all the way to verse 33. Now, 20 will start at kind of a paragraph division, and 33 is
in the middle.
Kind of in the middle. So before we read, let's just make a very quick commentary. So none of us have really looked at this gospel this morning. We do the Stations of the Cross liturgy on this Sunday, but since we've been doing the gospel reading for Sunday school, I thought, well, let's just continue. Let's see what would have been read, and we'll talk about that. So really, we're all going to be coming from this fresh, and we're all going to be coming from this clean. The Stations liturgy has gospel readings in it, built right in. It has Old Testament readings, it has Psalms, it has stuff from epistles. Everything that we would have done during the first half of the service in the Liturgy of the Word is already found within that liturgy. And while it's maybe not something you would do every Sunday, I always find a lot of value in us doing it together once as Lent is kind of coming to the end. Because he didn't get the chance to do it this morning, I'm going to have Doug read John 12, 22. Verses 20 through 33.
Now among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was at Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip went and told Andrew. Then Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servants be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." The crowd standing there heard it and said it was thunder. Others said, "An angel has spoken to him." Jesus answered, "This is the voice. This voice has come for your sake, not for mine. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out, and I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." He said this to indicate the kind of death he was to die.
All right, very good. So, we have sort of skipped quite a bit. You know, we spent time, obviously, in Mark in this particular lectionary year, and then last couple of weeks we were in John, but we were kind of near the beginning of John 2 and 3 and kind of around there. And all of a sudden we've skipped all the way to chapter 12. Can you take from the context of what's happening why we might be in chapter 12 all of a sudden? Right, and so is Jesus. So, even though there's a lot of chapters in John still to come, John spends a lot of time in Holy Week. He, you know, there's a lot of what Jesus says. You know, even that Last Supper is like chapters long, where Jesus has a lot of teaching that he wants his disciples to know right before the end. So we've skipped, skip to chapter 12, but in the kind of story of the gospel, this is actually very close to Holy Week, just like we are very close to Holy Week. We're only a week out from Palm Sunday, and so this is one of kind of the last interactions that Jesus will have prior to that kind of final Passover with his disciples. So there's a pretty good analog, I think, between what's happening here and kind of where we are in our own calendar. So how does this one start? Jesus is just kind of out in a crowd. And what happens?
A couple of Greeks want to see him.
Okay. So they went up to worship at the feast. And so they're just in a big crowd. And there's lots of people. There's people from all over. Remember that when Jesus cleans out the temple money changers, it's also around the time of Passover. And so Jews from all over, because they've been scattered over the generations, but they come back to Jerusalem and the temple for Passover because it's that important. So we've got Jews who are not just like local Jerusalemians. What would you call that? What would you call somebody who lives in Jerusalem? I don't know.
Jerusalemites.
We have got we've got Jews who are from far off. So when it says that they're Greeks, these could be Jews who are who've been raised in, you know, a different area that's a lot more Hellenized, it's a lot more Greek influenced, or these could be straight up Greeks. But what do they want?
To see Jesus.
And so what do they do?
They go find a disciple.
All right, so they find it. They go find a disciple, and they find the probably the Greekiest of the disciples that they can. Philip, that is a Greek name. And so, again, Philip is a Jew, but he is a what we call a Hellenized Jew, not someone who, you know, grew up and lived in geographical Judah, but someone who grew up in the diaspora, someone who grew up away from the area and kind of grew up differently than Jews had always been. And so whether they recognize a name or maybe the way he looked, maybe he cut his hair like they did, maybe he was wearing clothes like they do, but there was some kind of connection in these Greeks. They go to Philip, and what do they say to Philip?
They want to see Jesus.
Okay. Now, this seems like a throwaway line, but as a preacher, I try to keep this particular verse in my head every single Sunday. That I am not on stage, and I am not a performer, I am not a game show host, I am not a stand-up comedian, I am not the center of attention. But when I'm preaching is the most personalized thing that I do. I preach like me, and it's not like another guy or somebody else, and I try to put a lot of me into my preaching. But why are people there? And why are they listening? Please, sir, we wish to see Jesus. So even though it's me doing it, can I show you Jesus? Every Sunday, every time. And think of the simple beauty of that request. Now, why do they want to see Jesus? Pious speculation. It's just a guess.
Because of all his glory and what they've heard about.
Okay. So, rumor is spread, even the far-flung stuff, and these guys want to see Jesus. Now, maybe it's a very deeply holy moment, or maybe it's kind of like, hey, I hear the circus is in town. I love a trained bear. Whatever. But they say the right thing, which is we want to see Jesus. And so what Philip gets this request, and how does this work out? It's just there's kind of a funny little fireman's
one
carry
one
here.
Somebody else.
Right. Right. And so, yeah, there's kind of a, oh, you do, oh, what about you, and you, and so they kind of pass this back and forth, and when it gets back to Jesus, what is Jesus' response?
He starts preaching,
and what is this preaching about?
The hour is come.
And if they really want to see him, and they have to follow him, give up everything to follow him.
So, whether or not there was a, you know, kind of a deeply spiritual reason they wanted to see Jesus, or if they just kind of heard and they were curious, Jesus is kind of indicating that the time has changed. People will see me. But how are they going to see him from here on out?
Through their own faith.
Spirit.
Spirit.
What's going to happen? What is he talking about? It's going to happen very, very soon.
He's going to die.
He will die. He will be crucified and he will be raised again. Bless you. So, it's not just about him going from town to town anymore. It's not just about him preaching and teaching and healing anymore. But he takes his chance to say, hey, people want to come meet you to say, well, it's all about to change. And if they want to see me, they're going to see me in a different way than they might expect. So, what kind of illustration does he give here to explain himself? Let's talk about it for a second. The hour has come, so what's going to happen?
For him to be glorified?
Mm-hmm.
He talks about like wheat seed.
Seed. Okay, so a grain of wheat. And a grain of wheat by itself is not particularly useful. But what do you have to do with it?
Plant it.
Plant it.
You have to plant it. You have to bury it. It has to die. And if you like your grain, oh, my little grain of wheat. You're my favorite grain of wheat. I will never let anything happen to you. Well, at some point, if you actually want the grain of wheat to accomplish what it's supposed to accomplish, you've got to give it away. You have to bury it. You have to let it die. But what happens when that grain of wheat is buried in the ground dead?
Comes back to life.
That's where the real life will come from. The grain of wheat by itself has within it everything that it needs for more life and more grain and more growth, but you have to bury it first. Now, Jesus continues, and what does he relate this story of the grain to?
To him.
And?
Whoever loses his life.
I think everybody. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, he's definitely talking about his own death, but I think he's talking about ours too. So how are we like grains of wheat?
We're born again.
Okay.
If we just stay to ourselves and we don't reach out and help others, then we're just kind of that grain is
going to
die.
You know, if you do everything you can to preserve your life just the way it is. Oh, my little grain of wheat, you're so nice and I love you so much. You know, your life maintained in its comfort, maintained in its station, maintained exactly how it is and how you know it. Well, what happens if you just kind of keep the grain of wheat all by itself and never plant it?
Goes nowhere.
Nothing. What happens if you take your life and try to preserve it exactly and precisely how it's always been and how you like it right now?
That's how you
do it. Nothing.
You can't do anything.
So what needs to happen with our own lives?
Not think about ourselves.
So when Jesus says, he who loves his life loses it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it, what is he saying?
It's not of what you do. It's going to help you any. It's how your faith in God is going to make you live forever.
Mm-hmm. That grain by itself, if it's never buried, stays by itself. And if you try to protect your life just the way it is, if you try to grasp it and hold on to it, will you?
No.
No.
Changes every day.
Every day, whether you like it or not. My kids are not as small as they used to be. When they were, you know, little and adorable and played together and it was so much fun. And I've loved every stage, but you could pick one and just, you know, how sweet it was and how, you know, encouraging and whatever. You know, never grow up, you tell these, you know, like the real people. And but if you kind of demand that they always stay at that age and they always stay at that interaction with you and they always stay in that relationship, what's going to happen?
They're going to know where
it's going to go.
And it's not going to work.
No.
You can't make them not grow up, but I tell you what you can do, you can miss out on the different blessings of what they're like as they get older. I have different blessings with my kids as teenagers than I did when they were very small. And if I refused to do anything other than try to grasp the life that they had when they were 6 or 7 or 8 years old, and just sort of pretend that nothing had ever happened, nothing ever changed, I will miss the way that we could interact, the relationship that we could have, the fun things that we could do that are just different. And it's not that I will gain having a 6 or 7 or 8 year old forever, I'll actually lose everything. So when you try to grasp and cling and hold on to your life, well, I like everything just the way it is right now. Well, you're not only going to miss out on the good things that will happen and the changes and the differences day by day, you won't even be able to keep what you're grasping onto. It's going to slip right through your fingers no matter how hard you grasp.
In fact, it would be, the more you grasp, the quicker it'll slip.
Yeah.
You know, like Silly Putty or something, the tighter you hold it, the quicker
and
it's going to squeeze out.
The tighter you hold it, the more chance you have of losing it.
And you will. You're assured to lose it because that's not what life is. You can't preserve it in amber. Stuff that's preserved in amber is dead.
Plus you get to see the fruit of the spirit of what you planted in your children as they grow.
You know, just like it talks about that you know, the seed, once it's planted and it bears much fruit, those blessings that we had with the children when they are younger, we ought to be able to enjoy some of that harvest as they grow older, whether it's a harvest in faith, a harvest in relationship, you know, as they grow older and more mature and you're able to spend time with them differently. So this is not as backwards as it seems. It actually makes, I think, a lot of practical sense. You cannot grasp and cling and hold on to what you like, you will actually lose everything. Therefore, if you're going to lose it for the right reason and lose it in the right way. Give it away, give it to Jesus, and it will bear much fruit.
Can you imagine all these people hearing all this stuff for the first time and how they must have felt? I mean, that'd be like us today if you walked in the room and said this to us. Even though we read it, it had to be very hard to grasp.
Yeah, well, and what sort of amazing thing happens as he is sort of wrapping up his talk?
Voice from heaven.
All right, so God the Father speaks audibly from heaven, kind of like at the Transfiguration, kind of like at the baptism. And what does he say?
I have glorified your name, and I will glorify it again.
All right, so Jesus has said, you know, my soul is troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, for this purpose I have come to this hour. Father, glorify thy name. And the voice answers, I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. And so talking about the people who heard it for the first time, what's their response to this?
Thunder.
I think it was thunder.
Yeah. What the heck was that?
Yeah.
You know, it must have been, was it a low-flying plane or, you know, there was something happened that they cannot explain, and so they're trying to come up with a plausible explanation. You know, there are folks there who are not prepared to say, I have heard the voice of God the Father. And so they're saying there was thunder, and somebody says, oh, it's an angel, or something amazing has happened, we don't know exactly what it is. What is Jesus' response to this? What does he say to the crowd who was kind of debating what they just heard?
Yeah.
Right.
He already knows.
Yeah. I don't need this.
Right.
This is a sign. What are signs and wonders good for in the Bible?
Getting your attention for one.
Okay, they get your attention. As we look in, so 1 Corinthians 12 and 14 are all about spiritual gifts. They're all about members of the body. And there's some actual instruction given about, you know, some of the spectacular gifts and how they ought to be used rightly. Like, say you've got a gift of prophecy, a gift of tongues, or whatever. There's a way to do it that is a blessing to the people who are around. It edifies them, it encourages them, it gives them knowledge or whatever. And there's a way that's all about you. Hey, look at this amazing thing I can do. And, you know, when he writes about it in 1 Corinthians, Paul's saying it's not about you. So it you know, needs to be for the good of others. Signs and wonders are impressive. They can encourage believers, and they can attract non-believers. Whoa, what's going on over there? Huh, wow, that's I want to see what that's all about. So to hear a voice from God the Father saying, I have glorified my name, and I will glorify my name again. Why is that for other people and not for Jesus?
Because he knows it.
He already knows it.
Yeah.
This is no new information for him.
Because he doesn't feel maybe that they're really listening to him or grasping it strongly.
And there's some kind of confirmation for what he's been saying. That this is coming, that God will be glorified through this. God will be glorified through him laying down his own life. God will be glorified through him being buried and the fruit that will come from that. God will be glorified when he, as the grain of wheat, dies, and when we, as grains of wheat, die and can bear much fruit. That this is, and again, think about the timing it's coming here. So they're in Jerusalem. And stuff is about to happen. And the people who are willing to listen, not just hear it, but willing to listen. We remember the difference, and we talked about that, like, you know, when your mother tells you something, oh yeah, I heard you. Yeah, but did you listen? Were you paying attention? Did you actually do what I said? If I told you to go clean your room and you walked off and did something else, you know, the sound wave struck your eardrum, you heard me, but you didn't actually do it. You did not listen. So there are people who are going, oh, it must have been thunder. Were they heard it, but were they listening? No. So not everybody's listening. Everybody heard it, but not everybody's listening. But for those who are listening, what has God the Father said about the things that are going to happen over these next few holy days? He doesn't lay it out specifically, well, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. But if you heard it and you listened to it, what might you be thinking come Good Friday?
That's what he was talking about.
It's happening, like you said.
Yeah, not only the grain of wheat, but God is being glorified through this. Now, if I didn't listen, and I see this guy being whipped and beaten and people are yelling and screaming and spitting on him and then they nail him to a cross and they die, do I think God is glorified in that? No, that's terrible. That's just awful. But Jesus has not only said he must die for the fruit to come, but the voice of God the Father has said, I will glorify my name again in immediate response to this. You know, Jesus basically says, you know, I know it's coming and I'm nervous, but your will be done, so you'll be glorified. And the immediate response to that, you know, I'm nervous, you know, like this is Garden of Gethsemane kind of stuff. You know, if this cup could be passed away, but thy will be done. And the response is, I will glorify my name again. And so for the people who are listening, they're given the chance to put two and two together and see what will happen on Monday, Thursday, on Good Friday, on Holy Saturday, and even Easter morning. Is God bringing his own name glory?
I would think that most people would not be able to put it together. I think we are so lucky to have a book.
Yeah.
you know, where they had bits and pieces.
You know, it's laid out, but that doesn't mean we will understand, and it doesn't mean we will get it. And even the disciples are very troubled and very confused, no matter how many times Jesus tells them. He tells them pretty straight up a few times. By the way, I'm going to die, but I will be raised again according to the scriptures. And then, you know, when he dies, they're like, oh, what happened? Like,
they didn't know.
Really? Like, he said that six times. But, you know, isn't that life? Isn't that, we can know something, but it doesn't really make a difference when the time comes. Especially when we're talking about death. For those of you who have had a loved one die, especially a rather lengthy death, it is maybe not as applicable when a death has been very sudden or unexpected. But if we have, you know, sat with the dying, if we have waited with someone with a terminal illness, if we have watched someone get weaker and weaker and weaker over the course of weeks, months, or even years, and when they finally die, you're never ready for that moment. Even though you've been waiting, you know, someone's been in hospice care and they've been non-responsive, and you're just watching and waiting for hours or even days sometimes. But when the moment actually comes, you're not ready. And I think that's just life. And I think that's the way that we're built. And these disciples, no matter how many times they've been told, even after the resurrection, they're you know, they're hearing rumors from the road to Emmaus, where they're kind of talking, did you hear what? I don't know. And then there's a stranger, and he has to open up the scriptures to them and explain it. Like, oh yeah, I remember Jesus saying something. What do you think? Could that be what was going? You know, they don't even see it for a while. So, as much as we can know, or it's laid out for us, sometimes we're still just going to know what we know. You know, how many people heard what they heard, and they said, huh, that must be thunder. Why? Because it was stormy? Or because they just kind of didn't know what to do other than to dismiss it because they couldn't understand it. So, let's finish this up. These last three verses, now is the judgment of this world. What do we have here?
It is
time, and isn't it interesting that this whole conversation started off by some out-of-towners saying, we would like to see Jesus. Never met the guy. Could you introduce us? And how does he conclude what he's saying here? I will be lifted up from the earth, and I will draw everyone to me. You don't even have to come looking for me, but I will be lifted up. He's going to be lifted up how? On the cross. But this act will then allow people to be brought to him. Just last week, you know, the serpent on a stick. Moses raised it high, 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 so everyone in camp who has been afflicted, they can look and they can live. Jesus is raised off the ground and on a cross, and we who are afflicted, we can look and we can live. And it's all here, and it's, and he tells everybody, and yet they will still be surprised, and they will still be confused, and Holy Week will still be both holy and deeply troubling. But maybe that's just life. Even when he shows what kind of death he is to die. And so it reminds me of one of the prayers, beautiful prayer in the prayer book, that is found in the daily offices, the daily prayers that you say at different times of the day. Typically, I see it in morning prayer. It's one of the mission collects. So there's three or four of these prayers that you're supposed to say near the end every day. And you're near the end of this little prayer service. You pick one of them. And it seems particularly appropriate, not only this time of year, but even just reading this. So it goes something like this. Lord Jesus Christ, you stretched out your arms of love on the hard wood of the cross that all might come within the reach of your saving embrace. So clothe us in your spirit that we, reaching forth our hands in love, may bring those who do not know you to the knowledge and love of you. And isn't that what he's saying right here? To stretch out his arms of love on the hard wood of the cross. You know, how much does God love you? He loves you this much. You lifted high upon the earth, and that act might draw all the world to him. So that's where we are. And this is what we get with one last week to go before a bunch of hosannas and a bunch of crucifies him. Crucify hims. That's a better way to put it. All right? Okay, see you then.